Outdoor retailers, Utah wants them booted along with their $40 million. This is Jim DeBacchus on the left.
Crazy people in a town hall, and they don't work in Congress. This is Dan McKay on the right.
Keep those drones away from my bathroom window. I'm Natalie Gochner in the Political Center, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. But first, this news. Good morning, I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. We are here on Capitol Hill, and I have on my left State Senator Jim DeBacchus.
Hi there, welcome. Happy to be here on Capitol Hill.
And on the political right and on my right, Representative Dan McKay.
Good morning, Natalie.
Great to be with you guys. It is halfway through the session. Right? We've hit the halfway
point.
We hit
hump day yesterday. It's very exciting to be halfway through.
How's it feeling, guys? Feeling good?
Yeah, it's halfway. I'm tired. I got to be honest. I'm tired.
Okay.
None of my bills are killed yet.
You get a second wind as the session winds down.
Yeah, no question.
None of your bills
They're not numbered yet, but so I'm still optimistic.
Yeah. So I got a question for you guys, just because I think it's
Jim, are you going to pass any bills?
Am I going to pass any? Well, look.
Have you passed a bill? Can I ask you that question? I'm asking in all sincerity. I was trying to think the other day if I voted on something.
Passed some significant bills. One on the arts that set up a whole new way to fund arts.
That's right. That was a couple years ago. That was
Three or four bills, but.
I
think he was the force for the non-discrimination.
Name isn't on it, though.
Yeah.
And what I've discovered is if I have a great idea, then I bring it to a Republican and it passes, no questions. Yeah. And there it is.
Silent success.
Is it that bad?
It's that bad. Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, I got a question for you guys. So I come up here to be a part of this program, and I see you guys in suits and ties, and I see you're on TV because they broadcast floor time. And everybody wants to talk to you, and you have microphones in your face, and I get the feeling you can feel pretty important being up here as an elected official. And so my question is this, how do you stay grounded?
Oh, man, I walk in and my wife's like, hey, the diapers need to be changed. This needs to get done.
I got
a long list of stuff when I get home that have to be done.
Jim,
so
how do you stay grounded?
I just look at the number of bills they pass that are mine.
Oh,
it's not easy to get grounded, Where I look at, Margaret Dayton, who's the chairman of the some committee. So I had a couple of great bills, serious bills that ought to be, one that's serious and one that's kind of a message bill. So Senator Dayton fought in rules to get my bills. Then she said to me, I don't like your water bill. I'm not giving it a hearing. So that's the kind of thing I face.
I want to talk about all the turmoil in Washington, D.C., but let's save that for the second segment and talk for a minute about this outdoor retailers bordering on crisis for our state. And I only say that because if you're a hotel owner, if you're a restaurant downtown, if you are someone who really benefits from the convention here in town, our legislatures passed a toothless resolution that's got them angry.
Yeah.
And we will pay a price for it, Dan. Whether it annoys us, but we will pay an economic price for this.
This has been it's interesting to watch the outdoor groups, right?
Mm-hmm.
They disagree with policy, but they love our backyard, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. so what they have chosen is that they've chosen to make not an economic argument in favor of keeping them here. They've chosen to enter into public policy. And I think that will be a bad idea for them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And while it looks like,
just like it might not be good for the NBA to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sort of teasing, but we've been seeing that with LeBron James saying things. Yeah.
You got lots of people who are saying, wait a minute, Patagonia, is taking
North Face, REI.
Some of these guys want to jump out. It's like, you know what? At the end of the day, I think if you look at all the competing states where they look at RFPs, let's look at Denver, for example. Mm-hmm. And look at their options. Denver, for them to have the kind of amenities that we have within 20, 30 minutes mm-hmm. of
they'll
the
pay
convention
a price
center,
to go there. Yeah,
they're going to pay a price.
Yeah,
they're not going to be able to connect their goods with the actual activity like they can mm-hmm. here on the Wasatch mm-hmm. Front. So if they want to go somewhere else and drive 4 hours for skiing mm-hmm. or, drive 2 hours to get to a major river that can be used for kayaking.
Hour and a half to drive from the airport just to get to your hotel.
Yeah. If that's the desire, if that's the goal, then I think, Denver is the one that I think they're looking at from a policy. But I just think there is fundamentally a problem with them entering into the public policy space and saying that we shouldn't have our rights and using, you know, ultimate leverage of saying it's money. Because I know a Speaker of the House and I know a President of the Senate. They don't cave to that kind of stuff. Yeah. We've seen it over and over.
Jim, I want you to respond. I'll have something to say, but I'm sure you can say some things that will be helpful to our listeners.
This was Dumbo from Station One. This is a toothless resolution that means nothing that they knew would provoke.
And what did the resolution say, Jim?
The resolution said, Bears Ears and Grand Escalante, buzz off, it's ours. We want it hands off.
And ask the Trump administration to get rid of them.
And redo things and do the borders. There was no reason for that. If they want to talk to the Trump administration, you know what? They got enough people, they can pick up the phone, and there's a lot clearer things. But what they managed to do is take Patagonia and REI and the basic foundational companies that that decide where this convention is going to be, and they managed to rip up what will definitely be $40 million. And you think of that at one Uber ride at a time, or one hotel in Provo, or all the way to Ogden, or you think of it in terms of restaurants, or you think of it in terms of real live Utah jobs for their hysterical little hissy fit of pounding their fists to say, you bad, bad, bad people.
Dan just pulled the microphone closer to his face.
We should have just kept our mouths shut, kept their $40 million.
No, Jim, don't be mistaken. They were going to leverage this policy position no matter what. This was not something that it just came up. This is something we've been doing for a number of years about public lands, and we've been doing it for the last, I know, six sessions. And so it comes up every time the Black Diamond former founder stands up and makes his issue. I'm not saying anything about that. What I like is actually Natalie's point, which she's made. I don't know if this point she's going to make, but I agree with her 100%.
Well, I have a column in the paper this week that basically says there's something missing from this conversation. We love to talk about preservation. We love to talk about our anger of the public lands, but we don't talk about the economic hardship of rural Utah. And
that's
at the root of the problem. And I looked up data on this, you guys, and we had 10 counties that lost jobs in the last year. So their economies contracted, all of them in rural Utah.
Is that
Utah.
Because of tourism?
All of them in rural Utah.
It's because we depend
some of our energy, but not all extraction. But not all.
But
in a solutions-minded world, I put forward a few ideas in this column, and one of them is, why don't these outdoor products companies make a commitment to manufacture in rural Utah?
Yeah.
They provided jobs in rural Utah for these hard-done families. It could help.
I think that's the part, Natalie.
Then there's more that they could do. How about the carbon fiber research happening at the University of Utah that turns into skis and things like that? Let's invest in it.
The outdoor retailers are ignoring the plight of rural Utah. And so is the argument against this whole public lands issue, the whole fight. They're just ignoring the plight of the rural part of the state. And that's candidly, I think we have a moral obligation
to
make sure they're represented.
I want to take on your position just a little bit by saying we need a kinder and gentler Capitol Hill on this.
Yeah.
Okay, so Governor Herbert's meeting with these people and they have their legitimate gripe and Spencer Cox has said things like we need to be more vocal about how much we appreciate public lands in this state and things like that.
Yeah.
But I just think we need to calm down, listen more, engage more, and get at the root of the problems. Let's preserve lands and let's help people have jobs.
Yeah, that's probably fair.
No one is cheating rural Utah more than the state of Utah over the last generation. They faked them into thinking that the future is going to be in something it's not going to be. We should have a Marshall Plan for rural Utah. We should be pouring money in there instead of Facebook along the Wasatch Front. We should be taking $260 million and going to a lot of companies and saying, you know what? Build here and we're going to pay for it and we're going to put the infrastructure in. I don't see that. I don't see it. I hear a lot of blah, 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 but I don't feel a commitment, an economic commitment to rural Utah.
Governor Herbert put in his State of the State 25,000 jobs in the next 4 years off the Wasatch Front. He didn't call it a Manhattan Project. He didn't call it a Marshall Plan. But he's leaning in that direction. That's what we need resolutions on, Dan. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. In our next segment, we'll talk about the turmoil in the White House. I'm Natalie Gochner, joined by Dan McKay and Jim DeBacchus. Stay tuned.
Jim DeBacchus, proudly on Utah's left.
And Dan McKay, proudly on Utah's right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. And Dan, I know you said Utah's right because you know I'm going to the right in Washington, D.C., and it's not a pretty picture.
What do you mean? Seems like everything is going exactly as planned.
Oh, my goodness. I don't know how to describe it, but let me just set it up by saying this. New York Times reports intelligence agencies intercepted calls between Trump's campaign and Russian intelligence before the election. The National Security Advisor, Michael Flynn, is asked to resign. He did that on Monday.
Just a security advisor.
Trump was told several days after the inauguration that Flynn had misled the VP. Who knows what was going on behind the scenes with Mike Pence saying to Trump, we got to get rid of this guy. You got the campaign talking to Russian officials during the campaign. Holy smokes.
I think that's best summed up this way, Natalie. I went to see Bill Maher, who's filthy, in downtown Salt Lake Saturday.
Okay, yeah, he is.
And Maher stood up and he said, you know, I gave $1 million in cash in 2002 to Obama. He said, right now, I would join the Mormon church if Mitt Romney would become president. That's how far it's gotten where Bill Maher is saying that.
That's clever.
Timing is everything.
That's clever. You
know, we can all have Mitt regrets, I guess. But
Dan, where do you see this going?
No, I don't know.
I mean, you know, in my world, I don't see how you have this many conflicts, this many problems without it leading to some real serious almost impeachment-like problems for our president.
I don't want to know.
Yeah.
I it is a rocky adjustment thus far. Mm-hmm. It's not off to the strongest start. It's if it's any different than anybody thought it was going to be, though, I would be surprised. Mm-hmm. But I will say it is somewhat interesting to watch the change in tenor as everyone was so hard on everybody who was hard on Obama. Mm-hmm. Right. And now the new Tea Party, which is the Tea Party on the left, is equally angry, equally vitriolic. And I now understand, as I look back on it, why a lot of people were like, man, can't you just give Obama a break?
Yeah.
You know, let him get his feet under him. You don't get those feelings anymore.
Jim, what did you make of what Congressman Chaffetz was confronted with in the past week?
You know, ever since the Tea Party in 2009, after that congressional break and those hearings that were out of control, Utahns have kept themselves away from serious town hall meetings. Mm-hmm. Most of them are by phone. They screen the calls. They don't let people in. They only send it to one party. They pack the whole place. Matheson did it. I mean, this is just the way we do stuff.
Yeah.
So Chaffetz has a huge ego. So he decided, I can take this on. And I think some of the usual screening mechanisms were taken off. And That was the real face, I think, of a lot of Utahns that our congressional delegation and to a large extent our legislature simply refuses to acknowledge the existence of. And I think they speak for a considerable number of people that are really angry, really upset. And of course, the congressman didn't do too well. His Trumponian stories about these weren't real Utahns, they were bussed in and they were being paid, of course, is totally made up.
Yeah.
And even to this moment, he won't admit that.
Yeah, but isn't it easy for him to make that claim? Because when you watch the video of the things people were saying and doing, that's not my neighbor. And I've got some fairly liberal neighbors.
They look pretty mad.
That's not my neighbor. Yeah. That's not the people I know. That's not even the far left on the Capitol Hill.
Yeah.
It's not even I go down the list of all the things and the only thing I can come to the conclusion along with Chaffetz is those aren't people who live in Utah because Utah people don't act like that.
Yeah. Well, give Chaffetz credit for standing up in front of them and
he left 45 minutes early.
Yeah, I get that. But he was there. But here's the thing that it really opened up in my mind. I think of redistricting and I think of Salt Lake County and I think of how it's been sliced into bits and that, about one in every two people live in Salt Lake County in this state. It's a huge county, and it's different than many other places in the state, and we've sliced it up, and some people have lost their voice. And that's what I noticed when I saw there, because they don't have representatives who are like them. And that's the slicing up of Salt Lake County created that.
That's a political decision, that the Republicans have made.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
Democrats do the same in other states.
I was going to say,
Dan, do you know where Senator Hatch's residence is? Do you know where he lives?
I know
he lives. He has a condo in Sandy.
No, it's downtown Salt Lake.
Oh, is he downtown now?
Well, yeah. I'm so happy to hear that, because I was thinking of Bishop, Stewart, Love, Lee, none of them in Salt Lake County.
Oh. Yeah, no, Hatch lives here in town.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear it. And not that it means anything, because he's always in Washington. But there's something about Salt Lake County not having a voice anymore, and that's what I've noticed when I watched what Chaffetz went through.
The redistricting on a national level has caused a lot of the problems, I think. You know, what happened today with HB 11, there's been a systematic strangling of power by admittedly a small minority here in mm-hmm. Utah. And I've said to the president, who gets this more than most, said, look, if I'm going to lose a vote, I understand it, but in a committee hearing or on the floor, I want the ability to represent the 100,000 people who elected me and the many, many tens of hundreds of thousands of other people who believe the way I do. So don't shut me off. Let me have my say and we'll take mm-hmm. the vote. That's how the process works. But increasingly, with this overwhelming power, not with Chair McKay, by the way, but with others, they just don't, they see this as some kind of an irritation and want to silence everybody that and think it's inefficient to listen to people other than their own clique. It's a very sad state of affairs.
Yeah, interesting. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner, joined on the left by Senator Jim DeBacchus and on the right by Dan McKay. I want to ask both of you gentlemen about the Swallow trial and what you're seeing and what it's like up here on Capitol Hill as this very visible trial that penetrates into a lot of, let's call it, Republican circles, Dan. What are people just ignoring it up here on the Hill? Is it getting a lot of chit-chat?
Yeah, but for the mention of Greg Hughes
been silent
during
up here.
The thing. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's been silent.
I've been interested in how much of it has evolved around Mark Shurtleff at this point.
Yeah.
Just in the news reports.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so much of what John Swallow inherited in his office was a cultural issue and the way things were done. And I think what they've got to do is they've got to prove that culture existed and then prove that John was part of that culture. You know, and whether it be up to their accusations, I don't know.
So it's coming John's way, but it's been.
It's
Jim,
coming.
Anything from the left?
Almost no talk, but it goes to a sense on broader issues about criminal justice. I go back to my visit to Gunnison and to a 30-year-old man who was a con man and stole some money from people. He's going to be at Gunnison for 8 years. He stole $200,000, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
And I look at. Remember, Shurtleff was not found innocent. It took the prosecutors too long to prosecute the case. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you've got lawyers, if you can dole it out, if you get an entirely different sense of justice. And I suppose it's always been that way, and it probably always will. But every day I think about the young man in Gunnison and thousands of others that are rotting around in jails because they just didn't have the access. The financial access to justice the way rich people do.
Yeah. Dan, you're a kingpin when it comes to education appropriations up here on Capitol Hill. Give us insight, our listeners' insight, on where this education conversation is going to land. I'm speaking specifically about business community's interest in a $750 million injection of money because of needs in public ed and higher ed.
Yeah.
What's happening?
You know, I'm on the side of, you know, making priorities of how the education budget is spent, but how the revenue is raised is a whole other issue.
So you're more in the how it gets spent
out. I'm out of the revenue circle of trust, I guess, nowadays. So I hear things like the food tax. I hear things like, I mean, you go down the list of other options. I would be surprised if they were able to get anything done.
It's not clear to either of you what's going to happen. I mean, I read the news story that had President Niederhauser saying, hey, we're open to adjusting the gas tax. We're open to removing some sales tax earmarks for transportation. We're open to restoring the food tax. And those are strong words coming from a Senate president.
Yeah, they are. It will be very I think that will be the issue that comes up in the last week.
Yeah. So stay tuned. Keep some
be ready
some fuel in the tank, so to speak. Jim, telemedicine bill. My senator, Senator Shiazawa, made an impassioned plea to make an adjustment. I'd love you to describe this to listeners.
Telemedicine's a good deal for Utah because so much of our population is rural, and it gets the best specialist on the online with
helping Panguitch and helping Monticello.
It's a good bill. Well, stuck on the last four lines of that was a bill that would have prohibited physicians from administering any medications that would allow for abortions. And we went through...
It's like day after pill kind of things? Or
No, I don't think it was day after.
Okay.
Senator Ivory, Representative Ivory included four lines in there that would have allowed for this medication. And we had 2 days worth of debate back and forth. And finally, Senator Shiazawa gave, for him, a very impassioned speech, which, you know, he's a doctor. He's kind of
emergency room doc.
A scientist, kind of, you know, always under. He gave what I thought was a really impassioned thing and said, don't pass this. This has no place here. And the committee voted 5-2 to kill those four lines. Mm-hmm. So the telemedicine bill
moved
on
without it.
Yeah, without the
lawmaking happening. Yeah. Dan, what bills do you have left to work on or that you're excited about?
Well, I'm running a bill to get rid of safety inspections this year.
Whoa!
So automotive safety inspections. The program generates $25 million. And by $25 million is $25 million to inspection stations, right? And so it's kind of a cottage industry that's created around government regulation. And this $25 million, no one can prove that we actually get any benefit out of it. We started with 30-something states that had safety inspections back in the, back 30 years ago when the NTSB, National Transportation Safety Board, just said that they needed these to be considered as part of, highway funds. They no longer require these because, cars have gotten safer, one, but two, they just found that there wasn't really an impact that made any difference. And it is just, I tell you, it is so hard. Once there's a government program in place, it is so hard to do away with it because it's in place already. It's easy to play defense.
Jim, on the political left, do you support that bill?
This is Dan's best idea in years.
this is Jim getting away with a regulation.
I can remember. I can remember in college having a Datsun B210 that was about 17 years old. And really, the greatest anxiety time of the year was for that inspection. I'm serious, because if they found something, first of all, it was $20 or $30. And then if they found something, suddenly they could walk in the room and say it's $250.
Yeah.
And it was devastating. So I...
Power to Dan on this one.
Amen, brother. I'll go to the emissions test here with you.
We've got a few more minutes on the program. Dan, it's time to go to gripes.
Yeah.
Got a gripe for this
I'm
week?
I'm griping about Munchies on Capitol Hill.
A lot of food up here, huh?
My suits are getting too tight.
They feed you well, I suppose.
You know, there's always something out there for us to snack on. And
it's,
most of it will kill you.
Yeah. Jim, your gripe.
I got to say, just because we got out of the debate, HB 11, which... takes in effect, the lawyers are all saying blah blah blah, but it ends the requirement for having more than one party on a lot of important state boards and commissions, and it's just one more outreach to try to kill and make every voice in every room the same. And I don't think it's out of malice, and I can only imagine what the Constitutional Convention would have been like. Because a lot of the people we have around here just like hearing one voice, and they don't see a reason to have another voice. It's just a big irritant to them. So that's my gripe this week. HB 11 passed. It's a shame, and it is. It's more of the quelling down of any opposition view around here.
Yeah, interesting. I struggled with which gripe to pick, but I think I'm going to go to Utah County for this episode of the gentleman that had the drone that was doing Peeping Tom work. Did you guys see that news story? You're in a cocoon up here. Maybe our producer saw it. Yeah, but, this guy had a drone in a neighborhood, and when lights would go in what were bathrooms, he would send the drone down and get some footage and whatnot. And somebody caught on to it and ran outside and tracked where that drone went. And it landed in a church parking lot, and the person went and grabbed the little card out of the drone. I don't know, the little chip card, and turned it into police. And sure enough, it led to some tough things.
Is that illegal?
Well, I was thinking of it because we're sitting here in Dan's office, and you know, you have really interesting things on your desk. I was in here before you were here, and you've got a little spreadsheet over there that came from my policy shop. And I'm like, oh, that's nice seeing that on Dan's thing. But you know, you could get some nice intelligence on Capitol Hill with drones looking through these windows. Jim's got his mouth open.
I'm just worried about banning drones from the Senate because...
You got a lot of them in there.
I could... Yeah, exactly. Wow. So, I mean, that would not go over well. Wow.
Well, it's been a fun program. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle, joined on the left by Jim DeBacchus, on the right by Dan McKay. The program is produced by Ross Chambliss. Thank you for listening.